and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun down shining in. I found my mind in a...
Hello, welcome back to Statue Gas. Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board, along with Mr. Jack Silverman. We also have Mr. Kevin O'Neill. SP Futures, 50 cents. 50 cents after yesterday's big rally. Dow Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 5. So, Kevin, how many more days can we have our the tweeter-in-chief blurt out he's meeting with Z and have the market run up 15 points? It's like me watching the same John Wayne movie over and over again, hoping he doesn't fall off his horse this time or something. Just saying.
Well, do you think that was done to run up the market this time, or do you think that was done to because he's actually meeting with him?
They might actually be meeting, but it's done to run the market up. I mean, it was. Who knows how many people are trading? I mean, they immediately saw the spoos run up 15 points, and I was on the phone. I go, "What just happened?" Like 3 minutes later, out comes the tweet. So, and I'm not saying
yeah, I have a question for you.
Okay.
The president is going to be live tweeting during the Democratic debates. Is that going to be something to avoid at all costs, or will it be high comedy?
It'll probably be high comedy. I just, you know, I don't know what the... it's obviously getting me, you know, I don't get where I'm... Well, let me cook it up right now. We're talking about bonds. He was all over Draghi yesterday. Today was Draghi's name to be... Where they need to lower interest rates because it's causing, now he's become the currency manipulator in chief. He wants the dollar has to be down, and other people are manipulating their stuff so that their stuff is, their currencies get lower. Kevin, the bund rate is minus 0.3% for 10 years. Minus. There isn't a person in this world stupid enough other than the Central Bank of Europe to buy a bond where at the end of 10 years you get more money than you get less money than you give somebody. And now trumpeter in chief comes out and says it's not low enough. Does he even know that it's below zero?
Yeah, he probably does.
How much lower? I mean, there were those that would say,
well, if you know in mathematical terms, as you start down the how much lower, hey, infinitely lower, but how much lower should it be? I don't know.
Well, I mean, but you've got, there's a certain amount of, I would hope, Kevin, I mean, I don't know. I mean, obviously, they're pushing the envelopes of everything I thought was interesting in the world or right with the world. When somebody gives you, you need money to build a building, you need money to do something, you just want to buy a car. Even your parents, if they have the dough, or your favorite uncle, might say, Kevin, here's $5,000 from the car. Pay me when you get the dough or when you get your first few paychecks or something. He's never going to say, pay me back $4,800. I don't think. I mean, even if you're the most generous person on earth, if you let somebody, you give somebody a loan for, here, you need $20 to payday, here it is. But the idea of the guy gives you back 19 and says, that's the world rate, I can't even imagine that happening. Anybody do? I mean,
yet it does.
And yet it seems to be, if governments are involved. I mean,
we live in crazy times.
Yeah, I mean, it's
Tom. The bigger issue is I know you have to pay attention to it because it affects the market, but yep. I don't. I don't care what the president tweets on any given day. and I don't pay any attention to it. And it's very, very good for my blood pressure when I do it that way.
And
I am amazed at the number of people who follow every single tweet and get outraged by all of them. And is it, well, why would you do that to yourself? I mean, that's as crazy as making making a loan that pays you back less.
It bothers me for one reason, Kevin. I mean, I'm going to say it. Obviously, I do have to watch it because that's my job, man. But it bothers me for one reason. At some point, when you start to say, like, really dumb things and expect people to believe them, it's to the point where if you're in the audience, your reaction has to be. Again, I'm not going to speak for everybody, but I'm not going to speak for anybody. How can I say this politely? If you've got an ounce of brains, at some point it becomes an insult to you. I mean, if I were to walk out to 15 people and say, you know, it's nighttime. You look out the window, it's daytime. I mean, at some point, who do I think I'm? I'm either the biggest idiot in the world, or I think that the people I'm talking to are even bigger idiots. And that's the part I find insulting. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it's my Catholic education. I don't know what it is. When somebody tells me some huge whopper, I immediately think, how dumb does he think I am? Or she, or whoever it is.
Okay, but how long in our adult lives have we been asking that question out of politicians? Again, I
agree.
I'm not willing to get too worked up over every utterance here. It just doesn't do much good.
But we're talking about somebody who's 90% of the discussion on among, I think, somewhat intelligent people are, is he gonna yank out the federal chairman? Is it a massive power grab in that position, Kevin? And I think it is.
Okay.
And if we let it happen.
Doing that for a long time, too, step by step, inch by inch. Isn't it about time Congress flexes its muscles and says, executive branch does not get all the power? I mean, I've been complaining about this for a long time because, that's not the way it's supposed to be. That's not the way it's designed to be, and that's not the way I want it to be.
Right, and it's...
I'm not any more outraged today than I was 10 years ago.
This incredible shots at other people's central banks and things, this is something, though. Most people didn't go that far. Maybe it's just I just noticed it because that's my end.
Well, they didn't do it on Twitter. That's the only difference. They've been doing it.
I don't think
anybody's been throwing the weight around.
I mean, Bush couldn't stand Greenspan. He thinks he caught him, cost him the election. But you never heard Bush say that. Talk about Bush 1.
Well, the Bushes are different animals altogether because they're polite people.
Well, that's true.
In many ways, too polite for politics. And in many ways, boy, I wish politics could get back to that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. Hey, so there I was last night. Just when you think you're safe about being the biggest light eye on earth about self, and... Over the club, working out in the swimming pool, I drop in the hot tub and I run into your evil twin, Beldo. So he says, "Hey, what have you guys been talking about on the show this week?"
Does Beldo know he's my evil twin?
He'd love it if he knew that. So Beldo's like 3 years older than me. He's an absolute encyclopedia on who's fighting who, because he still follows boxing and all that other stuff. Not to mention, you realize we're down to 85 scholarships. We had 86, so we don't think we have to gray shirt somebody now.
Yeah, fringe player just took a medical red shirt. Don't know if that was a forced action or if he was really injured. I don't know. I hate that kind of roster engineering.
It is interesting, though. He tells me that Stanford now and for a while, they've never been able to fill up their 85. They got like 59 people in scholarship.
Stanford has funky academic requirements. Notre Dame's and Stanford's are different.
Yeah.
Notre Dame's big hang-up is getting people who have the right number of, core college prep courses. Because it's more math, more science than just about anybody else requires. Stanford's is more, it's just grades.
Oh, really? Okay.
And theirs is a little bit different. So Notre Dame, guys will get in with B's and C's for football as long as they have, as long as they've taken trig, as long as they've taken, three terms of science, and a lot of people don't take that much.
Right. Oh yeah.
A lot of good students don't take that much.
Well, the it just kind of boggles the mind. What we're talking about is you can give a certain amount of scholarships per year, but you can only have 85 people on the right. Now, the good school, what
right.
I say, the
so
good
25 max in any given year, 85 max on the roster.
And what we're talking about is when I say the good schools, the schools that I'll be nice this morning and say are on the edge of the rules, like Alabama and Clemson and those kinds of places, are always, they have extra people that seemingly go to junior colleges that they allegedly pay for themselves and can practice with the team. So their number is really like 90-95, right, Kevin? So, and you're going through and people will say, well, gee, you know, Alabama lost their best guard or their best tackle, and all of a sudden they got a guy just as good or a running back or whatever it is. It becomes down to the law of numbers, like every economic thing. And so when you have a team where they're playing a 12-game, really plus a bowl, or maybe even a playoff and a bowl, if you come in 26 players short, like Stanford has, you know, that's a massive.
I don't know if they're 26 short, but.
Well, he claims as of now they got 59 in scholarship. Now, it doesn't mean they won't fill in, but right now.
Well, and that's problematic. That's the kind of thing that when Tyrone Willingham left Notre Dame, that's what he left.
Yeah.
Was, you know, was like, just hadn't recruited out his roster. And so, yes, you're right. It's an extreme disadvantage because it makes everything you do difficult.
You just better hope nobody gets hurt, you know, which also has a tremendous difference in how much can you practice, really. Because people do get hurt in practice, so you almost have to lay off that, right?
We're talking about practice, Tom. Not a game.
Well, no,
what
I'm saying is show up with 59 people,
my best Allen Iverson here.
Yeah, well, you know, but I'm just saying. What did Dr. J's bro Pete tell me one day? That he said the Big Ten, all he did was practice so hard, people got hurt in practice. So somebody was playing Iowa with Hayden Fry, who's the coach in. Iowa loses by a few points, and they shake hands there for the game, and Hayden Fry says, I just wish I could have given you a better game. Got all these guys hurt. And the other coach says, well, what game did they get hurt in? Well, they didn't. They got hurt in practice. And he looks at him and says, well, whose fault is that? Right? I mean, things can happen. You can walk off a step and break something, but it's, anyway. So I said to Bello, he goes, well, what have the shows been about this week? And I said, well, I'm still kind of reeling from the one last week about the e-sports. I said, Notre Dame doing that stuff? Well, we're not doing it yet, but it turns out the guy's an encyclopedia in esports because he knows every football player for the last 20 years that would go back from the football game on Saturday five of them go back to an apartment and pull out their video games and play video games instead of like go to the bar like other people. And, he's naming a chapter and verse of guys. And he says, oh, Tom, you gotta understand, there are like thousands of people that live in their parents' basement, play video games, have never got a job, never intend to get a job. That they're just totally outside of society. They don't talk to their parents, and they just live down there. They don't pay rent. They don't do anything. I go, you got to be kidding me. You know, I mean,
let me give you more on that though, because one of my students, excuse me, one of my students a couple semesters ago did a project. His research project was on esports. There's leagues with money.
Yeah, oh yeah, he says they make money.
Who play them professionally? Who who have sponsors who put up tens of thousands, maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars? This is a big time thing.
Oh, he didn't say they weren't making any
legends
dough.
Legends of the sport.
He said these guys are a lot of these guys are making money. It's not like they're never going to have a regular. They wouldn't know what a regular job was. No interest in one. I guess those are some of the people in the last column of the employment thing that I'm always talking about.
Well, except the leagues, do have to have to report the income.
Okay.
They're organized just like Major League Baseball is organized.
All right. So let me ask you this: for everybody, it's like the Pro Golf Tour. I mean, for everybody who's making a decent living, there's probably how many guys scrambling around what would used to be the Nike Tour or trying to qualify for those every week, and
a lot of wannabes.
Yeah, how many people that are hanging around in their parents' basement doing this stuff, and I'm not saying they all do that, how many of them are getting a check? Is it You know, 1%, 2%, 20%.
I would imagine there's a lot of wannabes who are getting nothing or just marginal amounts out of it.
I hope Matt Weber's capping all this down, because we got to ask Jeff this next week. Because, I mean, I know when the, you know, there's all these people trying to qualify every week for every golf tournament, right? And if you don't mm-hmm. make the cut, you don't make a dime. So it's got to be sort of the same thing.
Yeah, right? Very similar.
So yeah, it's
PGA is probably that's a good example, and I am sure that there is a tournament circuit that's like that, but there are also leagues that are like I said, they're more akin to you know, the NFL, NHL, MLB, you know, any of those, where you compete on a weekend, week out basis, looking for a championship on the season.
Yeah, I would like to see. I mean, when you see a golf tournament, there's a list of all the people who made money in the tournament, and then there's the dreaded did not make cut, and they went home after paying all their expenses, or somebody paid their expenses with nothing. I just wonder what the bottom of the chain is.
Well, that's why you have to have a sponsor on the PGA,
right?
To get yourself started, and that's why you have to have sponsors in gaming too.
Who decides whose games to use?
Oh, I don't know.
Seems like but anyway,
you just got the sum total of my knowledge. So, you know,
right.
and any additional questions looking for information are not going to get you anywhere.
All right. Well, that's good, because I don't know anything, but I'm intrigued by this, as you can tell. Because it's all around me and I never saw it. That's a problem.
Right. Well, I had no idea it was such a big deal. And yeah, sooner or later something's going to go public, isn't it?
Yeah. You would think. Or what would happen if you and I tried to play one of these things? How bad would we be?
We'd get our asses kicked.
Well, I know we'd but I mean, would we even know how to do it? Is there an instruction?
sort of like every other sport at our age.
Oh, yeah, that's the truth. But anywho. So we have the Fed decision today. The chalk, as they say at the track, is that they're going to remove the word patient, and they're going to open up a channel for a cut next month. You know, I don't know. I don't believe that there's any need for a cut. That's just me, because there's two reasons. Without just being grumping about it, two reasons is it's not going to work its way down the chain at all. So it's not going to help anybody we know who has a credit card debt or any kind of a debt. So the idea to me, Kevin, and I don't know why. I guess I used to think there was an order to this stuff, and now there isn't, and it bothers me, because I think there was some logic to the order. I don't know if you can counsel me, counselor, but when the Fed used to do something, at least it affected everybody, and now it really doesn't, because what they're doing is more politics than it is. It's more pumping the market. It's more doing whatever, but it has really nothing to do with monetary policy, in my opinion. Now they, of course, would argue otherwise, but I mean they've got these inflation numbers now. I think one of the most I'll say lingering guests we've ever had on the show was Professor, what was his name? Goodhart?
It had
Goodhart's rule. And for those
Goodhart's law, yeah.
Yeah,
Goodhart's law. When a statistic becomes a target, it loses its value as a statistic.
Yeah. Last night I was heading over to the club, minding my own business, and all of a sudden there's a bar downstairs. I get the, hey, Tom. I think it can't be me. And sure enough, it was. The guy who runs the parking garages around here. And he was telling me how the city is now, they're trying to put another 8 or 9% on the parking taxes. And this is, you know, since the Democrats are now in office, you know, and I'll say that, it is a relentless drive to just get more and more revenue, because they're absolutely convinced that the programs they have or plan on having or whatever, or the people they plan on kicking money to, are the solution to just about everything, and everybody else should just give their last nickel for those programs, even if you don't agree with them, even if you don't think they've been successful or whatever. And you know, and that's, they think they have a mandate to do that. Kevin, the mayor won with like how many 15 other people running in the runoff, or not the runoff, in the pre election. She got maybe 100,000 votes and 2.7 million people. The governor, I don't know, he beat a guy nobody liked, and, you know, with promises to do God knows what. So now all of a sudden, they both of them feel they have this mandate to just take every last nickel out of you. And yet you walk down the street on the way to work this morning, and I see these two pretty high-end pieces of equipment, you know, for putting in pipes and stuff in the street. I don't think they've done anything in 3 weeks, Kevin. Now, I'm going to say right now that if anybody can afford to have a piece of equipment that expensive in the middle of the summertime, which is this is, and when I say the construction time, and not do anything for 10 or 15 days, you're getting paid way too much. I'm just saying. You know, because that's, I'm not very good on video games, but I'm pretty good on numbers. I'm just saying, if your contract allows you to not do anything for 3 weeks and just let stuff sit there, the contract is, you either got some kind of a clause in there where you can blame something and you ran into something you didn't expect, or the city's going to pay more, or else the contract was for too much money. I mean, am I right or wrong?
In what business does idle capacity work?
None. I mean, a plane on the ground.
Apparently, government business.
Yeah. A plane on the ground, read 737, is a loser. I mean, you look and see how Southwest Air, when they grew up and be one of the big guys, when that plane landed, they got people on and off that plane and back in the air in what, 20 minutes?
Yep, whatever it was, it was fast.
It was fast.
But yeah, because you still have to, you still have capital tied up in it. Which means that's as they'd say in the banking world, a non-earning asset.
Yep.
So you have that problem, and you also have the other problem is that it may be financed, and so you're paying the service on that, and that's not good either.
Well, you're playing it one way or the other, either implied or actual.
Yeah, so it's going to hit your line on the depreciation line without any associated revenue. Okay, but that's non-cash. But there is likely to be some real cash tied up in it as well, some cash expense, some ongoing cash expense. It's you're definitely getting paid too much if that's okay. Otherwise, you'd be selling off your non-earning assets.
Well, we have a remember when Mandy Weber was young? Well, Jack is young. He's on the board over there. The thing that what has happened between the long before the tweets with the Feds doing, you know, saving the banks after 2008 is we have an entire damn near generation of people, you know, male, female, whatever, that somewhere in their lifetime, Kevin, are going to learn the hard way the time value of money. I honestly believe that. Now, how bad it'll be or whatever, but the last 8 or 9 years is just not, I mean, it, in terms of even businesses, in terms of contractors, in terms of cities, they've totally lost any sort of time value of money thoughts. I mean, you don't, if you're borrowing money at 9% or 10%, you don't leave 15 bulldozers sitting there for 2 weeks. Not 15, but there's four. I mean, because you're paying 10% for the darn thing. Maybe more. If you don't care, if somehow, the contract's too big, or you are one of the few people who can get a loan out of a bank for 3%, you don't care so much. Right? I mean,
it doesn't hurt as much. It doesn't mean it doesn't hurt, though.
Right. It means it hurts a little bit. It hurts a little bit. But if you have the cash, right, you don't have the urge. In other words, if somebody gave you $1 billion in $1 bills, where are you going to go with that? I mean, maybe you can buy some stock yesterday morning before the tweet, and then they have a big day in the market. Well, it's been my people had a good day yesterday, so it's not like I'm complaining about it. But but you as an individual, you're not going to worry about leaving the bulldozer lie idle for a day if you personally, if Kevin O'Neill can just go to the bank and get 0%. For you, it doesn't make any difference, right?
Because other than opportunity cost, because
right.
You could be deploying that cash into a profitable activity.
Right. But just the money value.
Instead of having it idle. So it's still going to have a cost.
Well, hold that thought, Kevin. Come back. Let's talk a little bit more about Huawei. CFO saying a $30 billion revenue was missed due to the Trump stuff. No big deal. That's interesting. Dow up 5. NASDAQ futures Down a one, S&P futures down one, so not much going on. I'll be right back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello, everyone. Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hines. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Jack Silverman. Mr. Kevin O'Neill's with us as well. S&P futures are down $1. This is after yesterday's huge run-up. NASDAQ futures down 125, Dow up 5. So not much going on here, as we have the announcement is today, and we're having a news conference today as well, I believe. We're in Europe. We've got the DAX up 6. These guys were all up pretty huge yesterday as well. DAX up 6, call that flat. FTSE down 16.2%. These guys are all well over a percent yesterday on the Draghi announcement. CAC around up 3. Let's call that one flat. Asia, these guys, however, are catching up. So we've got the Nikkei up 361, 1.7%. That's in tune with what we were doing yesterday. Shanghai up 27. That's a full 1%. Hang Seng up 703. That's 2.5%. So big rallies out of those guys. Oil unchanged. Stuck right here at 53.90. It's actually up a little bit from the 52 and change it was the other day. Brent down 41 cents, 61.73. RBOB 271. I heard stories this morning of gas in the city here 265, 264, which is down like 40 cents in 3 weeks. That's a lot. Gold, we've got down $4, still 13.46, though, still pretty high. And silver, 14.91. Manny, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports. We had to get off the expressway this morning. Boy, that sucked.
We did. 36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. This sports weather traffic update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine, the guide to money and probability. Is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue, and Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Be sure to sign up for that free digital subscription today. They have a brand new release coming out here soon. In sports last night, let me do traffic first. The screen is actually looking very clear in spite of what we experienced coming in about an hour ago, Chief. There's no issues on the Kennedy, so that earlier crash at Jackson's all clear. There was also a big crash on the Dan Ryan at 35th Street earlier this morning. That's all clear as well. Stevenson and Eisenhower traffic is building, but no accidents to report. So we're off to a good start now after a bumpy start about an hour ago when it's usually very clear. Only crash on the radar right now is Randall Street at LaSalle downtown. But everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, lots of clouds, cooler temperatures than yesterday, especially near the lakefront. We'll be mostly cloudy with spotty showers and a high of 66, which is where we're at right now. So low to mid-60s throughout the day today. Much warmer inland and to the south, as they'll be in the mid-70s. But downtown near the lake, mid-60s is all you're getting today. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 76. Now sports. It was a big one last night. Cubs Sox, game one of the Crosstown Classic, two at Wrigley and then two later on in July down on the south side. And the White Sox took game one. It was a pitcher's duel throughout the night. In fact, Cole Hamels reached his 25th 100th strikeout in his career, just the 10th left-handed pitcher to do that all time. But he got a no decision in spite of allowing just one run in seven innings of work. Bullpen gave it up. Offense couldn't do anything after Kyle Schwarber's leadoff home run. And then Eloy Jimenez was the hero with a two-run homer with nobody out in the ninth inning. And that gave the Sox enough, as the Cubs offense did nothing in the bottom half, and the White Sox beat the Cubs 3-1. Game two tonight is a good pitching matchup, Giolito versus Lester. Looking forward to that one at Wrigley. That's a 7:05 first pitch. The Diamondbacks were blown out by the Rockies 8-1. Chief.
So the game last night was interesting. The Cubs, seems like Contreras and Baez, who for the first couple of months of the year were their two best players, now can't get a hit.
Well, Contreras didn't play last night, but
well, that's why.
Well,
I think he's not hitting.
I don't think that's why.
He didn't play because he's a catcher, and catchers don't, catchers get more days off than most because they have a harder job.
They do, and
Victor Caratini's doing very well, so it's a little bit easier to play him because you're not paying a huge price. So I don't think that's the issue. I think Bias is doing too much, swinging from the heels after being very much under control earlier in the season.
You're 100% right. Bias, they've both been, not as good as they were in April and May, but Bias specifically is, for whatever reason, when he was really staying back on the ball in April and May and going the other way and hitting for power the other way and staying on the ball, all of a sudden he's got that big swing from the heels, pull everything swing of late. And he hit a couple of balls hard last night into bad luck, but not a great night for him. Contreras was off because like Kevin said, one, you give catchers more days off, obviously, but two, Caratini has become Hamels' sort of personal catcher. He's caught him his last three starts, and Hamels has allowed like one earned run in his last three starts.
Well, he's a good catcher.
And he's really good at framing pitches, which is something that Wilson is not as good at. So Wilson will likely be back in the lineup tonight.
Well, somehow the same thing that affected them in the playoffs for the last 2 years is still there. The inability. What was the statistic? excuse me. Last year, Matty, with the how many games under two runs for a team that won 90 games was they had the.
Well, they scored a ton of runs last year as a team, but when you look deeper into the numbers, they had a huge spread from when they would score a lot, it was like, you know, a lot. They would score like 6, 7, 8 or more runs, but then they had a ton of games where they scored like less than 2 runs.
Yeah, they were.
It was very rare that they were scoring the 4 and 5 runs consistently.
Yeah, I mean, it was something weird, like they were in the top 3 in runs scored, but they're also in the top 3 of games in 2 runs or less.
Yeah, it was a strange.
In the quality management world, guys, you have to understand the average is fairly meaningless. Is where I'm going with this. So you don't worry about the average. You are more interested in variance, which means how often do I score 10 runs versus how often do I score 1. So you're looking for consistency in there, and you're looking for randomness. Because if it's non-random, if you can't hit left-handed pitchers, if you can't hit on the road, whatever the non-random factor is, you have to address that. As you dive into the statistics, you can look at the Cubs. That's an easy word for you to say, but not me. As you dive into the Cubs, you have to look at those things because the average number is going to look pretty good. But like I said, it's a fairly meaningless number.
Well, they are. I just think they're a very young team to be virtually all station-to-station baseball. And this year,
well, I don't know that that's a fair assessment, though. That they're all station-to-station. They have some really good base runners who consistently grab extra bases.
They lead the league, I think, 4 of the last 5 years, or 5 years in a row, going first to third. They're definitely not station-to-station. They take more extra bases than anyone. They don't steal bases, if that's what you mean.
Well, they don't steal bases, and they don't.
But they take the extra base more than anyone. And we saw it last night.
If you're going to start stealing bases, you have to hit like 80% for it to be effective.
I'm not so sure. I'm concerned about stealing. They're not a threat to steal, and I think that makes the opposing pitcher a little too comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, outside of Baez, really, they don't have anyone that puts fear in you stealing a base.
And I think in this day and age, if you can swing 5 or 6 more fastballs a game because the pitcher thinks you're going to do something, I think it makes a big difference.
I don't, but I understand what you're saying. 2016, they didn't steal bases either. I mean, they've won more games than anyone in the last 5 years, and they don't steal bases. But taking the extra base, I think, is very important, and they're very good at that. So far, they've scored 364 runs, which is best in their division, and it's looks like, what, fourth best maybe in the National League? Obviously, they're behind the Rockies. The Rockies always lead this statistic in Colorado. But take the Rockies out of it, and they're only behind, it looks like, the Braves, the Dodgers, and the Diamondbacks. So that would put them fifth overall, fourth if you take out the Rockies. So good, certainly, in the National League, but not like first or second like they were a month ago. They've really kind of sputtered this last month.
If I can find a place where I can easily download the run scored every game, I will. And on Friday, we'll talk about the variance stuff.
Yeah, I'd be interested.
It'll take a little bit more work to understand the randomness issues, but I can take apart that variance and say, here's how often they are, what you would say that you have these weird outlier games. Because you really need to eliminate the outliers. There has to be consistency in what you do, and it's hard to do that in baseball because there's so many factors that you can't control. You can't control who the opposing pitcher is, for example. So depending on who you run into, you're always going to score more runs against teams with bad pitching staffs and fewer runs. That's a non-random event. and you probably, you know, with a little bit of, well, not a little, but with some work, you can quantify that. But the, you know, you still want to see how much of a roller coaster ride the run scored is.
I'm just, as you know, I'm not the stats man, although sometimes my observations match the stats. Not all the time, as Matty's always quick to point out. But for a team loaded like that, off on the offensive side of the ball, as if you use a football analogy, there's way more one-run, zero-run, two-run games than you would expect, in my opinion.
Yeah, I intuitively I agree. So that, you know, we can test that though. We can back, you can confirm or deny.
And well, I didn't love the lineup last night. I mean, Schwarber leading off. That's since they've put him in the leadoff spot. He's been pretty good, and he gets a hit last night, the home run. Bryant batting two. He gets three hits last night. They're all singles, but still three hits. Rizzo is obviously been your best player all season.
Oh, yeah.
And he didn't do anything last night. He was 0-for-3 with a walk, but he was up with guys on base multiple times. In fact, I think all three at bats or all four at bats, and he did nothing. And then Baez was up with guys on base all night long and did nothing, and that just killed them. Then you had Hayward, who had a nice game, and then you had Caratini, who seemed he was up all night with guys on base, and he did nothing. But he's been good. The cargo experiment. I mean, it's early, but I'm ready to give up on it. I mean, he looks
ready to give up on that, and I don't need to see Descalso in the lineup again.
Yeah, I don't need to see Cargo or Descalso again. I mean, play Bodie every day. You know, and
I'd or Edison Russell's played well for
or play. I mean, Russell hasn't played that well, but at least he's going to play defense. Same with Almora. I mean, he sucks, but at least he'll play
I'll
defense.
I'll see that before I'll see Descalso.
Yeah, and give me Russell and Almora a little bit more.
Well,
just
the
for
other night, Almora had three hits.
He sucks. I mean, this is what year four, and he can't hit. I mean, I don't want to give up on the guy yet, but he doesn't hit for power. He doesn't hit for extra bases, and he doesn't even. Last year he hit for singles. This year he's not even getting on base.
I don't know. I think he's actually come around last month or two, but obviously, what's his name doesn't like him.
His on base percentage is .292, which is only 3 points better than Descalso. So he's their second worst player as far as getting on base on their team.
Yeah, and that's about 30 or 40 points below league average.
Yeah. And he doesn't hit for power either, although his power numbers have been slightly better this year. He's great defensively, and so, you know, you have that. But, I mean, you're not going to take Hayward out for him because Hayward's good defensively and much better offensively. You're not going to take Schwarber out. And, they've been trying this cargo experiment, but I'm about done with that. I would put.
You think he's not going to make it? He looked like he might be all right the first few games.
Yeah, I thought I didn't have a problem with the pickup at all. I think a change of scenery pickup like that, you know, has a chance of working, and the risk is so low. I mean, you're not really paying him much, and you didn't have to give anything up for him. Give it a shot, and maybe sometimes the change of scenery works. It worked for Hamels. I mean, he was terrible with the Rangers, and the Cubs brought him in, and he's been arguably their best pitcher. But so far, you know, it has not been good for Gonzalez, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's gone in a couple weeks.
I wouldn't be surprised that, you know, that when Kimbrel comes on, who are they going to cut loose? Almora's big value, I think, is going to be, as long as they have him, is going to be as the late inning defensive replacement.
Which is too bad, because he was a first round pick, but he was out of high school, so those are a little riskier. He's got some tools. I mean, he has a short, quick swing. You would think that he could put that together and be a guy that, you know, is a gap hitter. And the problem is he's not patient at the plate. He doesn't take any walks. He's not particularly a good base runner, in my opinion. And, you know, it's like he's been a below average player now, and this is, year four for him?
Yeah, I actually think the last couple months
year
I've seen
four, and his on base, his high water mark for on base, I'm just looking at it now, was .338. So we went .308, .338, .323, .292. If you're going to be a singles hitter, then you better get on base.
Yeah, you got to take off. Now, to his defense, he just turned 25, so he's a little younger than, you know, he was a high school draft pick. So he's still young, and you know, he could still figure it out, and I think the Cubs are holding out hope that he will. But man, he's having a tough year so far.
Well, I actually think he's making more contact, and he is a singles hitter. There's no doubt about that.
He's a singles hitter betting 250. I mean, if you're going to be a singles hitter, you got to, I mean, like Kevin said, you got to get on, but you got to take walks, and your average better be better than 250.
Well, I think sometimes these guys, if they don't play like a real lot, I don't think you can be a two-day-a-week player in a major league and hit 300. I really don't.
Well, I agree with that. It's very, very difficult.
67 games this year, so it's not like you can't say he isn't playing a lot.
Yeah, he's playing. He's definitely getting in.
Played 152 last year.
But I think the Cubs, like every team, I mean, it's not like there's, you know, it's sort of like you can go in the NBA and you can have as many teams as you want. And there's only a certain amount of guys that are 7'2" and can run and can play center, you know, type of thing. You still get a lot of big guys, but in Major League, there's never been more than seemingly 7 or 8 or 10 really good leadoff men at any given time in baseball, whether you had 16 teams or whether you had 30-some or 30. I mean, most teams don't have one, really.
I can't think of a single great leadoff hitter in all of baseball right now.
That's what I'm saying. There's not anybody there.
I can't name one.
Name one that hits 300 and then is going to steal 50 bases. There isn't anybody.
Well, there may be one out there, but we're not thinking of them, and we probably look into it, or our guy Joe can tweet one in because he knows.
Yep.
But just to give you a little bit of contrast, and here's a difference. Albert Almora's hitting 250. Jason Hayward's hitting 253.
Yeah.
Albert Almora's on base 292. Hayward's on base 351.
I mean, it's not even close.
Right.
And Hayward slugs a little bit too. He hits a lot more doubles, a lot more gap shots, obviously.
Hayward only has 4 doubles. He has 10 home runs, but 4 doubles.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. But the home runs obviously makes a big difference.
Well, when you look at the averages, I mean, I know people look at different statistics now, but it's an awful, highly paid, star-studded team. Do they have anybody over 300?
Batting average over 300? Not right now, no.
Not in the starting lineup. Caratini is.
Because Baez was for a while, or was it Contreras was there for a while? Contreras, right?
Both of them were.
Yeah.
Were above 300 the first 2 months, and they've both, Baez has dipped down to 282 batting average. Bryant is 282 also. And Caratini.
Then if you go look at the on base, Bryant's also he's 397.
Yeah.
And Rizzo's 389. And Contreras is 387. So they're showing discipline at the plate and finding extra ways to get on. Because if you get on base, you can score. If you don't get on base, you ain't scoring.
I still think that once a week, not every time up because you need his power, but once a week, once every 2 weeks, or twice a week, Schwarber has got to pop that one down the third baseline with that incredible shift they're giving the guy. I mean, you got to keep somebody on it somewhere.
I would love it. I would have no problem with it.
Yeah, I don't either. As Matt and I had a tweet exchange after who was it? Matt Carpenter bunted to the left side against the shift, and it rolled into the outfield. He had a double.
Yeah, well,
the shift was
so double,
which
was fantastic. If anybody hasn't seen it, Google search Matt. Start page search Matt Carpenter bunt double. It's a thing of beauty. I'd do it until they move back. You know, don't shift on me. Play me honestly.
I think it's harder for a right-handed hitter to bunt against the shift because you're bunting. You know, you've got further to go. Obviously, also bunting up the first baseline. But for a lefty to not be able to learn to drag one down, I would think that would be real easy to do, relatively easy compared to the right-handed batter.
Well, actually, in a way, though, the right-handed batter as a bunt, it's hard and it's there's a real art to it. But in general, if you have speed, you know, like a Chris Bryant does, if you have speed, all you have to do is roll it past the pitcher and you're on base.
Well, that's true. But I'm saying
maybe in an RBI situation, you want your guy swinging away. That's fine. But if I'm coming up lead off an inning and they want to give me a base, I say thank you and take it.
Absolutely, and the shift isn't as exaggerated in an RBI situation usually, so it probably doesn't quite come in play as much. But you're right. If you're leading off the inning, or if there's two outs and nobody on, and you're trying to get something started, I think why not? And we've seen the team a little bit more of late. I mean, I think Bryant did it last night. Hayward's done it recently. They're not bunting, but they're clearly trying to hit,
right,
find the hole,
slapping it a little bit
against the shift, and that's you know, I mean, that's working. Rizzo does that a little bit too, but Schwarber does not seem to do that at all.
Well, it's somewhat of a lost art. I mean, and I think the power numbers and the juice ball have changed the game. I mean, even the small guys can hit it out. So yeah, it's I mean, I'm not, you know, blind to that, but the bat handlers of the old days, the Nelly Foxes, the Bill Mazeroskis, that if there was a guy on second and nobody out, you can just guarantee a two hopper to the second baseman if they wanted to, you know, and get the guy to third base if it's a you know, it's the leading run or whatever. I'm not saying you might do that all the time because you'll have to put it out and you don't want to, but by and large, most of these guys have one swing, and it's nose to toes. Right? I mean, Rizzo is an unusual...
Well, too many guys do, yeah, for sure. And just to be clear, you know, look, you may hit that two-hopper to the second baseman that pushes the guy over to third, but you're not trying to ground out. You're trying to put a base hit in the right field.
Right.
But you know that if you make an out doing that, that it's going to be productive anyway.
Right. Kevin, real quick, I'm reading this headline here, and we've talked a little, you know, some baseball. You're starting to see, I mean, it's not just... you know, I'm going to say Americans are pretty darn good at this. You know, if you push on one side of a balloon, somebody figures out a way to get bigger on the other side of the balloon. And, you know, like I said, we're good at it, but it seems to me the world is getting bigger at this too. That if we put the clamps on Huawei here, they're going to go somewhere else. I mean, it's not immediately or whatever. It says here, now China rolls out red carpet for other countries as it ups tariffs on U.S. goods. I think what you're going to see, Kevin, and I, is this stuff, if it's really needed, or if Huawei really has some patents here, I don't know if they have as many as the one client told me they did, but they might have a few. Somehow or another, there's going to be these adjustments that are being made all over the place. And I don't know if we're going to end up getting where we want to go with this stuff. I mean, it's a big statement, and without being too definitive on this stuff, but I think people can get to adjust. They were going to find that things are coming from Vietnam, things are coming from somewhere else. Or, I mean, I don't know at the end of the day if what are really some of our goals are, and I don't know that we're going to get there. I really don't. Even though we get the tweet yesterday that they're having a big meeting in a couple of weeks. Huawei seems to have an awful lot of technology that people want. Somehow, I think people are going to get it, Kevin. I don't know. You know, is it just me or what?
What, you mean that markets work that way?
They didn't used to work
that's
that way necessarily.
Crazy,
well, they didn't used to work that way as much internationally. If you went back, you know, 35 years, because there were some barriers. But I think these guys, everybody's a marketer. I mean, Trump's obviously a marketer. The guys in China are looking for new markets, right? Why wouldn't they be? I mean,
well, they look for new markets, so that's places to sell. But they're going to look for new ways to places to produce too. Yeah, they'll adapt to the extent that you think it's long term. That any of these fundamental changes are just long term changes. Yeah, you bet they're going to adapt.
And you wonder where it's all going to end up. You know, stuff going back and forth across the border five times instead of one or two. I mean, is it efficient? Or does anybody care?
Might not be optimally efficient, but it might be efficient within the context of the of what the tariffs and the, you know, the trade constraints are.
Well, one, we only have a minute and a half, Kevin, but I have to ask you. I know this is not the strongest part of your game, but most people that look at, you know, economics with some sense of history, look at kind of what's going on right now, where every economy in the world is just pouring more and more money in. When does it become obvious before something crashes on a currency end of it? I mean, the reason why Facebook, other than to push themselves away from other regulatory problems, wants to come out with a currency is I think most people feel that these state currencies are going the wrong direction. I mean, how much more can you pile out there and make believe you've got more goods? I mean, can you imagine what the GDP must have been in the Weimar Republic when they're printing money every day? It had a double per day, right? But was it any good to anybody?
No,
I mean, what is somebody's going to say? Wait a minute, we've tried this negative interest rate, and Europe's still on its ass. Japan isn't going anywhere. It's not working. Let's go back to something normal. At least we can count things better. It's obvious to me it's not working, Kevin. I mean, why do people have to continue to think it is, and we need more, more, more?
People have been throwing good money after bad for as long as there's been good money.
I don't think you're probably right. Have a good rest of the week. Talk to you on Friday, buddy. SP Futures up 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 50 cents. We'll be right back.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, if they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with Jan Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. Might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at PTISecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@PTISecurities.com. That's J-O-H-N at PTISecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Jack Silverman on the board. We have Mr. Russell, Professor Russell Rhodes with us. S&P Futures, this is the dead zone before the Fed announcement. It's down a quarter. Up, unchanged. NASDAQ Futures down a quarter. Dow, same sort of way. Russell, how are you, bud?
I'm good. Is today Fed Day?
Well, they already had their tuna fish sandwich yesterday. They're getting two tuna fish sandwiches every meeting.
Oh, today's one of the... So the market, you have to say, to sound like business media, you have to say something like, the S&P is pausing in front of news later from the Fed.
Right, we already had our 15-point Trump tweet yesterday about it. Yet another meeting with Z. So how many times before people can you cry wolf on this one? We're up to about 100, I think.
I know, and the wolf crying volatility has gone down over time. I had that discussion with somebody on Monday, actually.
Yesterday
about
was
how, you know, like initially we reacted to everything, and now it's like, okay, that's just the crazy uncle being the crazy uncle at Thanksgiving.
Yesterday was a 15 pointer.
Okay.
It was a pretty good one yesterday. We were already up like 10, 12 spook points, or maybe a little more, and it jacked us up another 15 right instantly. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's so much. I don't know if it's as much people not wanting to be short as it is people buying into it for the long term. You know what I mean?
I think it's people front running the tweet. I honestly do. Honestly do. I mean, let's put it this way: the people in that White House know enough when something's market moving, and I'd be somewhat shocked if they didn't take advantage of it.
Or
Chinese
definitely is the stock market president.
But who's to say that once the Chinese confirmed it, they didn't trade?
Oh gosh, they were the first 10 point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't I don't. I mean, it's very very strange stuff we see going on. What'd you make of the Facebook announcement? The Libra, the new cryptocurrency.
You know, it's not so much of a direct shot at like the established ones that, you know, they actually held up after it. And the other thing I found interesting was it was Facebook, but not, you know, and then a lot of regular corporations and then a couple of VC guys. But you didn't see, I don't think Amazon was on that list of companies, and nor was Google or a couple of other big ones that are slipping my mind at the moment. And no real big brick-and-mortar retailers. That's the thing that I was trying to squeeze in there. You didn't see the Walmart, for instance, the list of big partners. They did say that they'd like the list of partners to grow. I think the number was 90, if I remember correctly. I read over it on the plane yesterday, off my phone. Sometimes, with everything going on around me on the plane, I don't take in as much as I should have. So,
well, you know, sometimes you have the eyes open.
I was surprised at it, not necessarily the number of partners, but the lack of a lot of old school partners, with the exception of brick and mortar retailers, and nobody, that's really, you know, over the top new that, and you know, like any of the internet companies or anything like that. So, I don't think it was as startling and disruptive as a lot of people thought it might be.
Well,
positive on their side is they do have a really nice infrastructure with everybody hooked up. But I don't know how many people trust that infrastructure. I signed my dad up for Facebook about a month ago, which means the last person on Earth signed up for Facebook. And, I did that so he could see pictures of his grandkids and stuff because he's down in Memphis. And within 3 days, everybody in my family and my extended family was getting a friend request from somebody faking to be my dad.
Great.
It's like his name is Dusty Rhodes. That's what we all call him. But it was somebody that was using the name Richard Rhodes, and a different picture of him that I don't know where they got from.
He wasn't
but the whole point behind that is there's a lack of confidence in Facebook as far as security goes.
Well, duh.
You see people saying my Facebook got hacked a lot.
Our buddy Jeff Joseph was on yesterday, and of course I was giving him no end of grief because A, he can take it, and B, he was talking about Facebook and how the issues they have, and I mean are very serious. I mean their security issues and everything, and how the company is in deep trouble. And I said, Jeff, you can never go on CNBC. He goes, why? I've been on there a couple times, but I really don't want to go back. I said, because the good looking women are going to flay you alive. They're going to say, what are you talking about, Mr. Joseph? Stock's up 50% this year. There can't be anything wrong. The market's telling
that's
you.
That's all they're going to do. Yeah.
It doesn't matter whether they shoot somebody out of an aircraft 3 days a week. Not that they do, but it doesn't matter. If the market's up, you can kill people and they don't care. I mean, the market has become their god. But it is. It's up 50% this year because the amount of people. Hey, I have a question for you.
Sure.
I used to know a guy named Dusty Rhodes back in my youth.
Uh-huh.
He was a traveling guy that went from campus to campus and was like the original person that put together massive demonstration of all the inconsistencies in the Kennedy assassination. And his name was Dusty Rhodes.
That is not him, nor was he a wrestler.
But every time you change owners, you got to change names when you're a wrestler.
No, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. That's not him either.
He was like the first guy. I was in college, and he came. He was going campus to campus. I saw him there. I think I saw him again here, like at Circle or someplace. And he'd have a 3-hour display with slides and movies. He had this Zapruder film and all that stuff, and he would talk about all the people who were eyewitness. This is in 1974. All the people that were eyewitnesses to the Kennedy thing, and how many of them have died in car accidents and other kinds of stuff, and the odds of that happening to those people was like 90 bazillion to one or something, and how he was absolutely convinced that Oswald did not kill Kennedy, or if he did, he had help. Mm-hmm. Interesting stuff. Hey, you know, if you were to do a go-back with Mr. Weber, who's capable of doing this, over the past probably 4 years that we've talked about these cryptocurrencies, the theme from everybody on the show, not that we ever agree on anything, is clearly that the cryptocurrencies that are out there somehow are totally misguided because they're investment more in the system than they are the currency itself. And that since there's no value to, quote, the currency, they will inevitably fail. And this is what our theory has been collectively, not just mine. And that someday, somewhere, because people are not trusting the fiat currencies and they're not trusting the fact that you can't use them really without the regulators getting right up your ass, basically. But if you spend $200, they want you on film. That there would be somewhere an alternative currency that A had value to it. It wasn't just out of nowhere. When I thought it would be, you know, a bunch of people with oil or some kind of wealth would issue currencies or something. Now, lo and behold, this thing comes out yesterday, and it's going to be based on something of value. It's based on a regular currency, right? But it's going to be a worldwide currency that people can use online and do transactions as it has a value to it. It's almost like somebody took the design from the show and put it into practice. Now, my question.
Well, I think. Go ahead. No, you're not wrong, but I know Zuckerberg gets up early on West Coast time to listen to us. Hey Jeff. But I think really what the newer iterations of cryptocurrencies, anything that's come after Bitcoin, they've tried to either hit on things that Bitcoin might be missing, like a lack of flexibility, that's what Ethereum does, or a backing of actual financial institutions, which was Ripple. Basically, I think what Facebook did was kind of like what Zuckerberg did to the Winklevoss twins. He took their idea, found a few flaws in it, made it a little bit better, and went with it. And that's the impression that I got with Libra, was any arguments that people make against a cryptocurrency, they wanted to make sure that you didn't have a big argument against what they came up with.
Well, it's like
it just makes sense.
Well, the guy who invented the wheel was pretty bright. The guy that invented the hole in the middle of the wheel and the axle was the guy who made things work, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the wheel doesn't do you much good if you got to ride on the outside of it, does it?
Yeah.
But
no, it does not.
And I mean, the interesting part now, if this thing's going to grow, let's talk about it for a minute because you are the professor. Obviously, we can name probably, well, you could probably name 10, but I can name right off the top of my head 5 countries that will be dying to get this or something like this. But now my question is, how does, since it's going to be, I'm putting words in Facebook's mouth here, since it's going to be based on value, how does somebody in Venezuela get the value to get the first one to spend it to somebody else?
I don't know if that's who they're going after.
I don't know about countries in turmoil, but they're saying
just in general. I think one of the best use case arguments for crypto has been people that don't have a fully developed banking system. I'm wondering if Facebook thinks they're going to supplement the current banking system. I think that's the other group that wasn't really involved with them. There were no big banks.
One of the dudes yesterday I listened to said that their enormous growth is now in India and places like that. So if you can have
Facebook?
Yes. So they said this thing could be a success. It could be without anybody here using it. Because there's a lot of places.
That's very much of a possibility. I think that's where a lot of the success from some of the current cryptos has come from, where people have no, you know, we still have pretty good faith in our dollar. There are a good portion of people in the world have lived through some sort of situation where what they thought they had in their wallet was worth something, and then suddenly it wasn't worth much at all.
We've got a president that says if the interest rates aren't negative, he's trying to drive the thing out of existence.
He's trying to drive the dollar
out of existence? Well, I mean, what do you think about a euro dollar when if you give it to somebody in 20 years, they give you back less than you gave it to them?
That's a lack of confidence. But people in the U.S. don't think that way yet about our currency.
We better wake up because we're getting very close.
You see it in Europe, and what they end up doing is I talked to somebody about this last week. What they end up doing is they actually take a look at where they can get some sort of yield, and they change their currency.
I'm already starting to see stuff here. And have for a little bit of a while where, you know, even in the building trades now, there's barter going on. There's people not wanting any part of this stuff. But let me go back to my original question. How do you, if you say India is our target, let's just pick it as a country, country A. How do you introduce it? How does the first person get one to sell? Or to buy something?
They basically exchange rupee for Libra or whatever they're going to call it.
And the Libra is going to be based on a dollar.
They use that to buy from somebody else.
So the Libra is going to be based on the dollar.
I think that's the issue there is if I can go to, you know, Starbucks and use my rupee, why would I, you know, swap over for a Libra? And now maybe the first time you go to another country where you think it'd be easier to do that, but that's one of the big issues right there. I mean, maybe they start to give some of these things to people through Facebook as a bonus for buying some other service.
Well, maybe some guy sends out a
open an account and get a toaster, but instead get a Libra.
Well, I mean, it could happen this way. I mean, if you're let's pick out something clean. You're gonna buy a case of softball jerseys from India.
Okay.
And the guy's gonna afterward he has to buy. Obviously, he's using cotton or whatever the hell you're using for your, you know, polys are gonna die for that softball shirt. I don't know, but something's gonna die, cotton or polys. So now he may say, pay me in Libra because I'm importing the fabric from Vietnam, and the guy there. The currency in Vietnam, which I think is probably all right, but say, or in China, you might say, this guy wants it. He'll be happy to take it in Libra, because when he buys something from the U.S., he doesn't want the Chinese government to know about it. I mean, so the first guy says, I'll take Libra, turns around, and then he buys it from somebody. Then that guy wants to buy something from the U.S., and all of a sudden, maybe the Chinese government doesn't know about it, neither do we. And maybe that's, that's what starts it off. There's got to be somebody.
Yeah, well, they're you know what? You know where this the big rally. I know you're watching the Bitcoin price every day. You know, the recent rally that we have actually had in Bitcoin really did coincide with the Chinese currency starting to fall apart.
Well, it coincided with the
and
gold
people
rally.
Trying to get their money out of it. So,
and the gold rally.
You know, maybe that's what?
And the gold rally.
Yeah.
But the only problem with the Bitcoin
as
is
as a store of value.
I can't
have a little bit more confidence in.
The thing with the Bitcoin, though, I can't figure out what in there is. To me, it's like tulips, honestly.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no basic value there. I mean, because you can't, if you buy all the Bitcoin in the world, it doesn't get you the blockchain. It doesn't really get you anything. I mean, I don't know what. I mean, if it was a currency, you wouldn't want it going up and down all the time. Like that.
Unless you're using it as a store of value. And you want it going up.
Well, sure. Well, that's what I said.
Yeah. That's what a lot of people are doing. That's why I own it.
Well, that's why people had tulip bulbs, right? It was a store of value until they weren't.
It's the same reason that, you know, people trade. People are going to buy something today, hoping that somebody will be able to sell it to somebody else at a little bit higher price a little bit later on today. Now you can argue that if you're doing stocks, that there's some sort of intrinsic value behind what you're buying, but typically what the market value of a company is and what the actual value of their current assets is two different things. And with the value of their assets being much lower, people are waiting or buying with the anticipation that they're going to continue to make money, and as they continue to make money, the book value or the intrinsic value of the company is going to go up. But at the same time, you're going to see what the market is paying for the stock to go up as well. That's what you're really shooting for. I think there's a lot of that with Bitcoin as well. And a lot of it, if you're in Europe and you think the euro is going to go to hell or the British pound is going to go to hell, it's an alternative to gold to be a store of value. In fact, I think it's one of the reasons that gold doesn't react as much as it had in the past when people were looking for a safe haven.
Well, we talk about it all the time. But my question to you is the professors. The way things are being judged, which you fairly articulated, it's not the first time that's happened. I mean, it's happened in a lot of ways. It's happened, a lot of companies. It happened to the railroads. It happened to the, when TV became a thing. I mean, wasn't the price of,
RCA was out of control. Yeah. Radio Company of America.
Yeah.
Was completely out of control. I was watching, because this is what I do when I'm on the road and I party. I was watching a thing about the transistor and how life-changing it was, and then I went and did a little looking into what happened to the company stocks around the invention of the transistor, and it was incredible, especially Sony being the biggest beneficiary, but, that's...
Well, sure. I mean, it was a big deal, but I guess what I'm saying is you lose track of... Like the time value of money. I mean, right now we are. This is kind of my theme today, is people just want these stocks to go up. I deal with clients all day long, and if you sold a stock, at 70 and a year later it's 80. I mean, you're a blithering idiot because look, it's 80 and what are you even looking at it for? Because the stuff we bought is up too. But this one, I'm just looking at this one. Why are you still looking at it? We sold it a year ago. Well, because it was mine. I mean, people have this incredible affinity now, just not for even a stock, but I haven't heard anybody ask me in literally 4 years, when you say something about a company, not one person has ever asked how much they make and what's their dividend. Unless,
oh, I don't know.
Except for the real older group that's actually looking for dividends. You know, because we do a dividend program for people too. But it's very rare. And even then, if they'll say, okay, I'll take 8% if you can put me together, 20 stocks that allegedly paid percent, which is hard to do. But say you did, or 6% or 7, when the market goes up, then they're not happy because what am I doing in dividend stocks? So, I mean, people have this absolute idea that this market would game is what I'm calling it right now for a lot of people. I mean, if you ever sell a stock for somebody, even with their approval, at 100, and 2 weeks later it's 105, I mean, you might as well jump in Lake Michigan in the middle. Because it's, I was owed that $5. I mean, I'm owed the top. You know, it's a whole different, and by the way, if it takes every central bank in the world to throw so much money out there to where interest is zero and the whole place is screwed up, that's okay, because my stock's up. I mean, we've got an entirely, now my question is, is this going to continue for another 30 years, or are we going to get this readjustment back to, quote, the mean, to where a stock that's never made any money, never is going to make any money, is not trading 4,000? Or, I mean,
oh, yeah. We're going to get, we always get an adjustment back to the mean. It happens every 10 or 15 years. Not necessarily the mean, because that would be implying an average, but to the, to more of a intrinsic value of what these investments are really worth. And you can take, this is very difficult for radio, you can take GDP growth plus an inflation number and go back 100 years and chart that out for the earnings of what is now the S&P 500, and you can totally see instances where the stock market didn't do anything for a while and then started to take off once it bounced off that number. Saw it bounce off that number in 1987 and saw it bounce off that number in 2008 as well. I've got a little bit of cash that's just sitting there waiting for us to hit that number again.
Well, I've
been waiting a while.
Well, yeah, and every day you have that cash. I mean, I literally have accounts with, honestly, where there's somebody might have, pick a number, $5 million, and then switching over from one group of stock to another, they might have a couple mm-hmm. a couple hundred thousand in cash. The day like yesterday, people were like, "What are you doing in cash?" I'm not in cash. I mean, I'm one settling while the other ones. I mean, it's not like what do you? Or if you say, "Okay, well, why don't I put together a synthetic little option spread here to make it seem like we're totally in cash?" And the next day, we didn't spend all $200,000. No, because I can do the same thing with $10,000 using options. Yeah, but it's not the same thing. I still got it. I mean, it's like it's very. When the market was rallying, the first time up to 87 in that whole area. I went to a couple of these seminars where they had these guys with all the quant dudes, and they were giving lectures to like all the money managers from like every state in the country. And I was going to, you know, at the CBOE, I'd go, and I'd be piling there. Well, this was even in the 90s. After 87, all we did was go up every day, right, to 2008, really. And so they decided, why do money managers not perform as well as the market? You know, by some infinitesimal number. You know, like the market is making 7 and money managers made 6.8 or 6.7, and it's constant drain. Why were they all, well, part of it was fees, but if you took the fees out, it was because no matter what, every money manager always had a little bit in cash. Either in case of a withdrawal, if there was multiple people in the account or something like that. It was always something that was causing you to have in cash. So, the idea was that if you had, we're not talking about something I manage, we're talking, if you had a $2 billion account for California or someplace, and the market's going to make 7%, well, somehow out of that $2 billion, you had, maybe you were getting dividends and then put them in the next, whatever it was, if you had, $10 million in cash, which would be what, half of 1% or something, it's somehow or another you're dragging because you got to be in. Because the market just is going up relentlessly, and you've got to be in. Mm-hmm. So then they would have all these formulas, which of course you and I from the trading floor could have done in our head, right? If you want to make sure that you're in this other 100 million, for every time you sell, even if you're not in the market a day, with every single stinking penny, which you and I could have done in options behind our back, they would say you need to buy this many futures, because then that replicates you being in. So you need to cover. You need to cover the change in your pocket because the change is going up and you're missing on the change. I'm like, I'm listening to this crap and I'm going, you've got to be kidding me. We're right back at that. If I don't have every cent and all we're doing is going up, the president wants it up. We all know it's going to be up by the election next year. We're going to be at new highs because the guy's going to run it up there for the election. We all know that. And yet you and I know that Since when, in the history of the world, have presidents been able, for a short period of time, to devalue the rest of the world? I mean, you look at an Amazon, and again, I have people in Amazon, stock's $2,000, give or take. It's the 1906.
Yeah.
Explain to me, Lucy, when this stock is going to be making $180 a year and sending you a check for 50, which is what they should be doing at $1,900 a share. I don't think, if you say that to somebody, they're going to look at you like you got four heads. My S&P futures up 25 cents, NASDAQ futures unchanged. You're right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holland, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Jack Silver, and on the board, Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. Hey, if you haven't heard already, Luckbox Magazine, The Guide to Money and Probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 an issue. Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription, luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Most of our people are piling into that. It's pretty good. Boy, Jeff's been a great guest, too.
Absolutely. I got mine, and it's fantastic.
Well, I have a question for you, Manny, so hang on there after the thing, because you and Russell are going to explain this all to me. S&P futures are up 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 850. These are the June futures. The SEP S&P is up 75 cents, so they're pretty close. It's a $5 premium on a SEP with the S&P, but right now the June futures up 75 cents in the S&P and $8 in the Russell. I'm sorry, the NASDAQ. We got Russell on the brain. Russell, because I have a position in it, and Russell, because we have Russell Rhodes here. Dow futures up 7. Over in Europe, we're slow there as well. Big moves over in Asia as they catch up with us yesterday. DAX down a whole dollar, call that flat. FTSE down 26.4%. CAC around up 3, call that flat. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei 361, over 21,000 again. 21,333. These guys, interest rates are minus 0.15%, so they're in the same boat as Europe. Shanghai up 27, that's a full 1%. Hang Seng up 703, that's 2.5%. Oil kind of hanging, up a penny. Brent down 38 cents. Its spread is now down to $8 from 950, which is interesting. RBOB gas 171. Gold is down $3, but still very close to 1350. 1347, kind of in the high of the last couple of years. Silver up 1497, very close to $15, but it hasn't been for a while either. Matty, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have one significant crash in the area. It's I-57 southbound at Halstead that's causing delays on the outbound side of I-57, so keep that in mind. No other issues on the south side, though. We had an earlier crash, as I mentioned last hour, on the inbound Ryan at 35th Street. That's all clear. But still some resulting congestion on the Ryan and then on the outbound I-57 due to that crash. Bishop Ford looks okay. No issues on the Stevenson or Eisenhower, though heavy traffic volume. Same for the Kennedy and Edens, but no accidents to report. Only other accident in the area is in the Western Burbs, 31st Street at Kenman Avenue. There is a crash just south of Forest Park. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, overcast skies, a high of 66, which is kind of where we're at right now. So we'll be in the low to mid-60s. Could have some rain in the forecast as well as temperatures stay cool near the lake. We'll be in the mid-70s further inland and to the south and southwest. But at the lakefront downtown Chicago, highs in the low to mid-60s, which is kind of where we're at right now. Could have some stray showers as well. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 77. In sports, Game 1 of the Crosstown Classic went to the White Sox up at Wrigley. It was a 1-1 tie in the ninth before former Cubs top prospect Eloy Jimenez hit a two-run shot off of Pedro Strop. And the White Sox bullpen continued the shutdown of the Cubs offense, and they beat the Cubs 3-1. Game 2 tonight, nice pitching matchup, Giolito versus Lester, 7:05 first pitch at Wrigley. The Diamondbacks were blown out by the Rockies, 8-1. Chief.
All right, hang there for a second. Before we get back to our evaluation thing with the professor, I'm not going to say where I was or who I was talking to. Could have been a coffee shop, could have been a library, could have been any number of places.
Maybe a saloon.
Maybe a saloon. That a restaurant, of a lounge, you know, more like a restaurant.
With a celestial name?
Yes. No, that wasn't there.
Okay.
And the question came up regarding the Target outage. And let's just say the person who was next to me said, here's what I think happened. No, I don't think that he or she has any sort of... I think that some hackers got into Target. They called the company and they said, if you don't want this thing going down, we want $5 million. And the company told them to pound sand. And they put it all down. And 2 hours later, the company called up and said, whatever you want, we'll give it to you. We've been hearing about that going on in smaller places. Target's awful big for that.
Well, it happens small, medium, and big places. These ransom attacks happen all the time.
That's why I wanted you on the phone, Matty, because I know you know about
but
this.
But I don't have any intel on the Target
situation. Is there any kind of rumor?
This is the first I've heard of a rumor about it. But
the rumor is it was an error during maintenance.
Okay, well, that would be what I would think it would be, too.
But doing maintenance on a Saturday... their busiest day of the week.
Agreed. There's no possible way.
That's the first thing that gets my tinfoil hat conspiracy thing going right there.
There's no possible way that they would do maintenance on a Saturday during the day. There's no way. That's a blatant lie. The maintenance, you always do maintenance at an off time on your systems. You, like our company, we do maintenance like Wednesdays at like 2 a.m. I mean, that's when you.
Yeah, I would assume like Sunday starting at 1 a.m. or something like
Maddie,
that.
But Maddie, if you mess up the maintenance, you don't know till you turn it on, right?
Well, I mean, you're testing it throughout.
Okay, all right. I mean, you know more about this than me, but at some point, if there's a screw up in the maintenance, how do you know until the thing's up and running and you need it?
Yeah, I agree with Russell though. I just don't see any way that you would do maintenance on a Saturday afternoon. That's your busiest time at Target or any retail store. That just makes no sense.
Now
I don't know that there was a ransom attack per se, but I would not be surprised whatsoever if there was some sort of cyber attack and it led to the systems being shut down. I don't know though that, you know, they were forced to pay some sum of money to get the system
shut down. Yeah,
I don't know about that, but it's definitely possible.
You know, they didn't join the Libra project. Maybe Zuckerberg went after them.
Maybe.
I'll show you why you should have joined my currency.
As you know, Russell, for a lot of reasons, things that have happened to people that are close to me and even banks that I choose to do business with, I'm appalled at how can I do this politically correctly, as we obviously care a lot about our first responders and things like that. The simple fact is the law enforcement background in this country is going all to hell, in my opinion. And that if Target calls up somebody, if that did happen to them, they're going to say, it's your problem. Seriously. I mean, there's no bank that expects any help from law enforcement. There's no securities firm.
The FBI has a whole cybersecurity division.
They do, and they. I'm going to say
I think they're helping Target.
They might be helping Target, but they probably wouldn't help you or me.
I mean, you might be right about that.
I'm saying if you think you've got these people working for you, think again.
Because I go to those guys come and speak at our company all the time. The FBI cybersecurity guys.
They're speaking, but they're not doing anything.
And they, I don't know. They claim to be doing all kinds of stuff.
I
don't know. And I wouldn't be surprised at all if they weren't servicing the little guy.
I'm just saying.
But if Target calls, they're answering.
I would say that if a bank of any kind of size, well, you do your stuff at Chase or whatever. It's not like I haven't had stuff at a big bank either, but. I mean, I'm going to think these little guys are on their own. And if somebody hacks something out of their account, they're going to come in and they're going to find the bank for procedures not being right. They're not going to go after the guy who did it. I mean, it really is.
You can't go after people in Russia. I mean, their hands are tied.
I don't think they even look, man.
They know exactly where it's all coming from. They have all the data.
They know the origination for sure. They don't know who.
It's very easy to pinpoint where it came from as far as, you know, the region, the city. In a lot of cases, they know exactly who did it, not always. But you can't, I mean, how does the FBI easily get into Russia or Yugoslavia or wherever where all this stuff comes from?
We had a person.
Or China, for that matter.
We had a person that was obviously caught at both ends. We had a person who called up our clearing firm. Obviously, don't know how the system works. They wanted to get a check out of a PTI account by calling up our clearing firm. And, of course, you can't do that. I mean, that money's not getting out of any place. I mean, it's not going to get out of Schwab. It's not going to get out of PTI. The guy calls me from our clearing firm, and he says, this guy claims to be your client, and he wants a check. And I go, well, why isn't he calling me? That's what I don't know. He claims he had the name and address of a client. Now, whether he broke into the guy's office and saw the PTI or the Charles Schwab statement or whatever it is, because a lot of these people get this from breaking and entering. And he goes, well, he's on the phone. I go, put him in. Because I just happen to know this client very well. And as soon as he realized I recognized his name, he slammed down the phone. And he was gone. And I said, okay, do you guys have a record of the number? Well, yeah. Are you going to call somebody? Well, no, they don't want to do anything. They're not going to see where it is. Maybe it's a bird phone. Maybe it's somebody's apartment. But the thing is, the people who are doing this on a daily basis are so bold because they know nothing's ever going to happen to them. As long as you stay under 50 grand, the FBI's number is like a million. I mean, it's like putting a, even a guy like Russell, who's not a drinker, if you were to put a sign at the 7-Eleven Anything under five cases, we won't prosecute. Even Russell would know it only take four cases. A beer.
Even me.
Even Russell would figure that out.
I'd love to see a sign like that.
Well, I know. Yeah,
I'd even tip.
I'd even tip, yeah. I'm saying the whole idea that your law enforcement group is out there working for you is it's absolute. Talk about it, nothing. Anyway, but enough with that.
Kevin writes in, I almost never shop at Target, but I was there Saturday during the outage after getting a haircut in the same shopping area. Systems were behaving as if there was a database problem. Scan, no response. Scan, except the ninth or tenth time, and the next item repeat. So it kept scanning, trying to find, you know, some whatever he was trying to scan, and then finally it would go through, it sounds like.
So, of course, they had no ability to, not that anybody would want them to add up three or four items and then take money from somebody. I'm sure they didn't drop back to that.
Oh, you mean just be able to do that on their own?
Yeah.
They would have had to take a loss because everybody would have to have run to the electronics department and grab a calculator.
Well, I was in a
even if that's the case, I mean, which I don't think it is. I think people can count. But if I mean, 99% of the people at Target are paying with their credit card.
Yeah, I'm going to say.
How do you scan the item?
Yeah, how do you
which
scan
you can't to even get the total. It's not like there's price stickers on the items.
No, there's no price stickers on the items.
So,
I mean, that's a problem.
Yeah, blaming the cashiers, I don't think.
No. I would never.
Oh, no.
I'm saying there's no backup system is what I was trying to say clumsily. Yeah.
There's just no easy way to, if the machine's not working, you're just stuck for so many, including, like, reorder inventory and things like that.
Right.
Just can't.
Well, your buddy Thomas and I, we have one of those, what's the Mexican place at McDonald's? Spun off?
Chipotle.
There's one by us. So, you know, Thomas and I pile in there, and of course, guess who's paying? And so we get up there, and all of a sudden the thing conks out just as our order comes up. So it was like 16 and a quarter, and I give the lady $20. And she goes, we got to wait till the system was back up. And I go, why? She goes, well, so I can make change. I said, it's 16 and a quarter. Here's a 20. It's $3.75. She gets the manager. The manager comes over and he says, I've got this figured out. And he pulls out a calculator. I go, you've got to be kidding me. I don't want to insult anybody. He goes, what do you mean?
No,
my
kids start the math classes they take now. They start using the calculator in about sixth grade. So I don't think it's anybody's fault other than people. You know, you and I were in a situation at one time in our career where we had to do math very quickly in our head.
Right. They didn't allow calculators on a trading floor. Right?
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we were both in situations like that for a while. So I think our perception of what kind of math ability people should have is a little skewed.
Well, I said, I'm not, I don't want to insult anybody.
Yeah.
I said, if this ever happens again, take the $20 bill and put it on top across the cashier thing. And the bill is 16 and a quarter. Count up to 20. Three quarters, 17, 18, 19, 20, and that's your change.
Yeah.
And the guy looks at me and he goes, how did you figure that out? I said, I didn't figure it out. The ladies who used to sell stuff in the Kroger long before me, that's how they did it. That's the easiest way.
Well, anyone that's ever worked in retail, that's at least when I did back in high school, that's how you got trained.
Right.
So,
I delivered pizza forever and had to do those things in my, you know.
Yeah. I guess I just assume that everyone can do quick math in their head, but maybe they can't.
Well, I think when you grow, first of all, I grab a calculator now as bad as the next guy. But I think in school, there should be one class one day with it and one day without it.
I mean,
this is not that difficult, I don't think, but anyway. So let's
keep going. I've tried to give a couple of exams at Loyola every once in a while where I totally avoid having to use a calculator because, I just want them to, so I don't put very difficult math problems on there, but it drives me insane when I see some of the math errors that I see.
Russell, you know, tell you what though, you lose it. If you're not doing like long division and stuff, I was taking a refresher series 65 test and I was going through all the stuff because I hadn't gone through it in a while. And I'm looking at the math, and I'm going, God, I used to be able to do that in a second. No, I can't. I mean, if you don't do it, boy, you know, you do lose it. I mean,
it's good for it. Your brain's a muscle. You want here's just an image to ruin the rest of your day.
Oh, God.
You know how Alan Greenspan would keep his brain functioning well? He would sit in the bathtub and do calculus problems.
I'm going to say that out of all the things...
Unthink the vision you just got.
Yikes.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Did you take calculus in college? Did you take it in college?
What, calculus?
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually... And I took the hard calculus. I was in engineer. I started out in engineering school, so... there were two calculuses, one for... people going into the sciences, and then what was actually called business calculus.
So that was like business calculus was like racks for jacks, or what?
Yeah, kind of. Not that easy, but
well, I did the same thing.
It was a lot more about calculating derivatives because that's where some of the people were going to end up.
Yeah, we were
easier form of calculus.
We did that at Notre Dame. I was in the engineering and science calculus as well, where you're. You're into the arc cosines and the cosines and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I will say this. I did very well. 2 years later, I couldn't answer a problem. Out of all the things I've ever learned, if you don't do that once in a while, there is no reinforcement in day-to-day activity whatsoever. I took a test at the University of Chicago like 3 years later. Actually, I did this as a freshman, Notre Dame, so it was like 5 years later. There's like one derivative on there. I didn't know where to start. It was like, I haven't seen one of those in 5 years. What is this thing? Anyway, in terms of evaluation, though, we were talking earlier about segue back.
Uh-huh.
How do you go from, when I started the market, the interest rates were 12%. And if you told somebody about a stock, the first grill you got, not that I wasn't in retail at the time, how much dividend are they paying? How much this? How much that? Because, I can get 10% in a bank. And now all of a sudden it seems like, nobody seems to care at all. I mean, it's beyond meat. It's been up and down. It traded over 200 hours yesterday during the show, and it dropped down to 160 by like 9:30. I mean, there's no thought of these guys making dough. I mean, at least now. Mm-hmm. But every company starts like that. It's not like it's, the companies today that make money started out as, somebody gleaming a designer's eye. So it's not like it's new, but it really, if you look at a company like Amazon, again, I'm not beating up on them, but the stock is $1,900 and, I'm going to say they make, less than 20? I mean, I should look it up, but it's not like they're making 150. Then you're getting a check. But, and I can understand it, Russell, and see if you agree. If you think that 5 years from now, they are going to be making $200 and sending you a check for 50.
I'm getting ready to say something that I'm sure was drilled into you over and over again because you're a University of Chicago guy, but when you're buying a stock, if you intend on holding it for, as long as the business is around, what you're doing is you're paying for what you think the discounted value of the current cash flows
is,
or the future cash flows is. That's it.
That's right.
So, if people are rationally doing what they're supposed to be doing, they think that the future cash flows that you could realize from Amazon are going to be worth about $1,900 right now.
And you could be... That even the dreams of avarice, and I'll say that, he puts, five more industries out of business and one day says, today's the day, guys, I'm raising prices 50% and gets away with it. The number might be 400 a year. It could be undervalued at 1900, right?
Yeah.
But
just by the way, the current earnings per share is $23.95. Very good on pulling that number out.
That was close. But
yeah, you were close. You were closer than I thought you were. That's why I went.
That's why you checked. You were hoping it to be either zero or like 100.
I wanted to play with the numbers a little bit to keep my brain sharp.
But the weird part is that now there's no charge to wait. And you and I think that there'll be a reversion to the mean on that someday. But you know what? We've been wrong, Russell, for 5 years.
I have this whole thing, there's a book, and this goes so against what's good for our industry, but Ben Stein wrote a book a while back, Yes, You Can Beat the Market or something like that. And basically it's sitting on cash, and then whenever we get a correction, that's when you buy. I partially bought when we had somewhat of a correction back in December, but didn't fully buy. So now I'm waiting for the next correction.
But what you and I are talking about, though, a reversion to... say the days where, you can wait 5 years for $1,900 on Amazon, or you can put it in the bank at 10, which I hope we never go back to that, or 8.
Yeah.
You realize that it's costing you $1,000 to wait for the 5 years. Because now there's no cost to wait. But the corrections you're talking about and what Ben Stein's talking about are, you know, are over exuberance type of thing where you're going to go down 5%, 10%, maybe 12%, 15%.
The long term corrections that we have, and it takes a lot of patience to sit around and wait for those things.
But it's not what you and I experienced in our young lives when rates went from, you know, 4 to 12, in which case the market go or the spoos go from 2,900 to, you know, 14 or 12 and stay there for like a decade. Neither one of us are expecting that. But if you get that kind of a jump revaluation, you know, we're up pretty high. There's nothing that says the 5 to 10% is the limit. If we really are talking about, I wish it was 5%, 10% was the limit. But you know, but I tell you what, though, I've been longer this year than I ever have been, Russell. And I have my puts, but I string them a little bit below the market. But the thing I've done differently is when I sell calls, I at least make the attempt to sell the calls way out of the money. I mean, I'm not. If I'm buying something at 100, I'm not selling the 101s like I used to at one time. I mean, I'm trying to find, you know, the 106s, well, you know, type of thing or something.
You always get to pose questions to me. I want to pose one to you.
Go right ahead.
And this comes from something that was said at one of the SIBO risk management conferences where the guy that actually managed money for University of Chicago's endowment a few years ago said that, and we were getting the same questions. Why would you be buying stocks, you know, this late in the bull market? And he said, well, I've got portfolio protection. The worst I can do is be down 5%. So I don't mind continuing to buy stocks.
Right.
And I just wonder if there are more sophisticated investors out there that are protected in a way like you are, that are okay with buying stocks because they've got some limited downside to it. And that, you know, use of insurance against the drop is keeping them in the market.
Well, the reason why
what keeps pushing the market higher, because you don't mind buying stock. You mind buying stocks if you think that you could lose 20 or 30%. You're probably less reluctant to buy stocks if you've got no protection.
Well, I'll give you one.
If you've got protection, you're willing to continue to put money in the stocks on every dip.
The question comes is how much you're willing to pay for the protection,
and that cost has been cheap for the past few years.
Well.
It's becoming cheap again.
Well, but it's not.
I'm amazed at where VIX is.
In 2007, when PTI Securities, shameless plug, was the Morningstar Money Manager of the Year, because the market went flying down, and it's the reason why we were Money Manager of the Year, Russell. I had a feeling we were at some kind of a top, not top, top, top. I'm not a market timer, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think I was buying the puts at an 8 implied volatility, way, like half as much as they are now. So I actually bought some people on the top, you know, and you'd say, well, gee, what an idiot that guy is. But the puts were so cheap, instead of doing 1-to-1, I did 1.5-to-1. Mm-hmm. So I'm buying, you know, buying a stock for like 200 and something. We were buying a spider. I think I was buying the year and a half out puts a long time ago. $8, $9. I mean, some ridiculous number. So I said, you know what? I'm going to buy, I bought 1.5 times as many. So when the market went down, I had extra puts, and the volatility went from like 8 to 60. We actually, even though I was delta, I'm going to say 35 long, we made a fortune on the downside because of the volatility explosion.
Yeah,
because
you got extra juice, and you got the gamma working for you.
Yeah, but it was like a total double, you know, coming our way type of thing. And people, what was the secret? There was no secret. I just was buying puts. And I saw they were so cheap, I just bought a few extra. There was no genius to it. I mean, the timing ended up being right, but I mean, right now, I think they're not cheap enough to buy extras. So you're going to have a little bit of risk. Russell, thank you very much, buddy. Be safe in all your travels, and I'll talk to you next week. SP Futures up a quarter, NASDAQ Futures up 975. Back tomorrow after the big announcement to tell you all about it.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.